Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, places, and stories and events in our Central Iowa community. I am Mike Metz, your host for this hour, here in Studio A along with engineer Mike Murphy and Milford Township's resident naturalist and neighbor, Pat Schlerbaum. And joining us via Zoom is Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana. Welcome to you all. Well, we look forward later in the hour to Anna's heart-to-heart and tune-in Tuesday's messages, but first... Somehow, it feels appropriate to hear the Chicago Symphony led by Fritz Reiner. I was going to say Carl Reiner, folks. I'm sorry. Fritz Reiner perform Richard Strauss's familiar tone poem, Also Sprach Zarathustra, as an appropriate introduction for our first guest, Dr. Brian Hornbuckle, Iowa State University Professor of Agronomy and Director of the Graduate Education for Agricultural Meteorology. Dr. Hornbuckle, thank you for joining us today on Local Talk. It's my understanding that you have been selected by NASA to serve on an advisory panel. Could you please share with our listeners what this panel's all about?
Sure. This happened last summer, this past summer, summer 2020, and the job of this advisory panel is to review all the satellites that NASA has launched and are currently in orbit about Earth, looking down at Earth and helping us understand what's happening on Earth. And these are the satellite missions that were launched, at least 3 to 5 years previously, and are now in a period outside of what's called their prime mission. In other words, the period which they were designed to operate. So they've gone past their prime, but they're still operating well. And now NASA has to make a decision on whether to keep them going or bring them down so that their budget can be spent on new satellites. So I was one of 13 people from across the United States selected to help NASA decide whether or not the new science that we are able to get with these existing satellites is worth the money, or should be spending the money on a new type of satellite to learn new things about our Earth.
Okay. Is there certain criteria that the panel sets up, or that... the panel, along with your expertise, is a determinant for whether these remain in action or not?
Well, there's not any strict criteria, but not only are there 13 scientists who are the people that are most using the data coming from these satellites, but there's also a panel of public companies that use the data also, and they also give advice on how useful this data is coming from the satellites. And then there is another group of engineers that look at how well the satellites are still functioning mechanically and how much propellant they have left, and whether or not when they are closed out when they re-enter Earth's atmosphere and burn up and eventually hit the ground, whether or not they're going to hurt people or not. What's the probability of that, which is very small, by the way? So all these things go into this decision. So there's not really a strict criteria, but it's just a best. We give the best advice we can on how valuable the information is, how well the spacecraft is functioning, how useful is it to people outside of science, and then NASA makes the decision based on those that input.
Okay, so just supposition here. What would happen if you decided, well, this satellite is no longer serviceable, but then for some reason something comes up and changes somebody's mind? Is there still recovery time to realign the satellite, get it back in orbit? Is there a kind of a wiggle room time period there? Or once you make that decision, it's toast for that satellite, so to speak?
I'd say it's probably toast for that satellite. But there's so many decisions made prior to that final decision that there's plenty of time to reverse course. And again, I want to emphasize that we don't actually decide. What we do is we recommend. And there's one person at NASA, ultimately, that makes a decision on when to pull the plug. And when that decision's made, then it happens. Because once you start the right kind of maneuver with a satellite that is kind of old, probably has not a lot of fuel left on it, it would be hard to push it back up high enough in its orbit to keep it from disintegrating in the atmosphere as it gets lower and lower.
And for our listeners, they need to know that these satellites don't maintain their orbit because of the pull of Earth's gravity on them, so they have to occasionally be repositioned, if my understanding is right. And that's the fuel you're talking about, is to supply those rockets, for a better term, to maintain that position.
Right. So it's a combination of both. So you can think of them as continually falling and missing the Earth because the Earth is moving out from underneath it. But you're right. The atmosphere doesn't stop at a certain point. It just keeps getting thinner and thinner and thinner. And so there's always a little drag. You know, when you're driving down the highway and it's windy, you're going to get less gas mileage, right? Because the wind is pushing you back. So there's always a little bit of drag on the satellite. So occasionally you have to make a correction by using some kind of fuel booster to do that.
Yeah, we can't escape the fact that Sir Isaac is involved along with some other physics. So something that's close to my heart.
We've all experienced that. Yes.
Yeah. Now you aren't alone. You aren't the lone Iowan on this panel, I understand. Can you share with our listeners a little bit about your state colleague?
Yeah. So it is pretty unique that there are two Iowans of these 13 people that are giving NASA this advice. So the other person is Dr. Jun Wang at the University of Iowa, and he's in their chemical environmental engineering department. And his specialty is modeling weather and climate and thinking about what we call atmospheric chemistry, how different elements move around in the atmosphere. And so it is pretty rare to have two people, again, out of 13, out of the 50 states, to have two Iowans. And so it just says a lot about the quality of our two, and by the way, you and I too, of our three institutions here in the state.
Well, for some of our listeners, they may not realize that James Van Allen was very instrumental in a lot of the research that was started at the University of Iowa, and he had a major impact on a number of other individuals dealing with climate and the ionosphere and those kinds of things. So it's it's important to keep Midwestern folks involved in this that I no longer call it common sense, but good sense views of things are in play here. So how do you use any of the data or information that's collected from these satellites, Brian?
Yeah, so my research has to do with using satellites to look at Earth, and the satellite that I use that NASA have launched is able to see liquid water in soil and in vegetation. And so I'm in the Department of Agronomy, and agronomists who are scientists that learn about how we can produce plants that can give us food, feed, fiber, or fuel, the four Fs. Agronomists want to know about water in the soil, right? So that's my connection through agronomy to NASA. And currently what our group is doing is we're trying to use this NASA satellite not only look at water in soil, which we call soil moisture, but also water in crops and how that water changes over the growing season and what that can tell us about how happy the crops are. Are they doing okay, or are they not doing okay? And can we see that before other indicators tell us that they may not be doing okay?
Now, when these models were first worked on, I assume there's a lot of mathematics involved in those models, but is there ground truthing as part of that to make sure things are working?
Yes, exactly right. So that's called validation. So it's important to determine how well these satellites are working. And we're very fortunate here in Iowa to have a validation site, which is located up in Hamilton and Harding counties. It's administered by the USDA ARS, the United States Department of Agriculture, Agricultural Research Service. And there are 20 sites in this kind of two-county area that are measuring soil moisture, the water content of the soil, in the ground. And this is what we call our truth. This is what we compare the satellite measurement to. And it's our best estimate of what this true soil moisture is. And another thing I need to mention here is that the satellite that I work with, the smallest detail I can see is like the size of an Iowa county. So we get one measurement, for example, for Story County. So we're not looking at farm fields. We're not looking at your backyard. It's a county-sized right now. That's what the technology allows us to do. So these 20 sites that are actually measuring soil moisture in the ground are spread out over a county area, and we basically average those together to tell us what the true value that the satellite should see, and that's how we check on it, how we validate it.
Okay, so what I'm understanding is that if you were looking at every county in Iowa, which this obviously doesn't do, you would have about 20 or so of those validation sites to compare with, correct?
Well, there are 99 counties in Iowa, basically 100, right?
Right.
Kossuth County is twice as big as it should be. So roughly, the satellite sees about 100 different what we call pixels in Iowa. And that might not sound so great, but it's a lot better than we used to do. And if you think about that over the whole globe, that's a lot of pixels. And at that scale, knowing about soil moisture is still very useful for telling us about how soil moisture affects weather and climate.
About how many years of data have you collected to be able to, and I'm sure you haven't gotten through all of it yet.
Well, I've been personally working on this since I started as a graduate student back in the middle to late 90s. And the community has been working on this since about the mid-70s. This validation site here in Iowa was established around 2012, 2013, 2014, something like that. And it's still functioning right now because our satellite is still up.
Okay, so when was that satellite launched?
So the satellite's name is SMAP, S-M-A-P. That stands for Soil Moisture Active Passive. And it was launched in January of 2015. So it's been up for 6 years now. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's in this review, because it's passed, again, what's called its prime mission of about 3, 4, or 5 years, and we had to decide whether to extend it or not.
Okay. Is there, if for some reason, well, for some reason, if it's determined that this is no longer serviceable for the amount of funds that are being used, is there a future satellite in the works as far as doing this, or are there other methods that have come on board now?
Yeah, you touched a sore spot in our community, because right now there's not really a firm, what we call follow-on mission, and we're really concerned about that, because we've been able to show, at least we think, that this satellite is very valuable. It's providing information that more and more people are using. For example, the Air Force has started to use it in their weather forecasting. But no, there's not a NASA follow-on yet, and we're concerned about it and hoping to correct that in the future.
So is there something that listeners can do as far as the pen and paper or the emails to those that are interested, especially in the agronomy interest folks, and those who are interested in water, especially now that we seem to be going through a drought period, that's more on the top of the pile for some folks. Can they do things to push the interests, so to speak?
Sure. The best thing would be to contact representatives and U.S. senators and tell them that this is valuable information, especially for Iowa. That's the best thing to do, is, you know, go through your representative and make your interests known. And on, you know, the scientist side, we'll keep showing the value of this data, participating in these kinds of reviews, making sure NASA administrators know that this is important, and hopefully have the influence to see something come down the road.
Okay. Dr. Hornbuckle, do you have anything else to add before we close out this session?
No, other than that was fun to play that whole segment, that whole song right at the beginning. I wasn't expecting the whole way, but it's been a while since I've heard that. So thanks for doing that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
We all, you know, if people got up in this area and looked east, there's a fingernail moon out there, and it just was a fitting symbol for us, I think. There's a few of us that really enjoy that piece of music.
Yeah, I guess I might say, you know, remember that NASA is not just about the moon and Mars. It's about studying our home planet, the only planet that we know we can live on.
Right. Those are good words to think about. And just to add, you know, it was studies of Venus that had some of our individuals decide we needed to study the greenhouse effect here on Earth. And it was Iowa student who brought that up. So thank you, Dr. Brian Hornbuckle.
Yep, thank you.
And we are going to welcome Keith Morgan, Coordinator of County Emergency Management. Keith, could you please introduce your guest once you greet us today?
Hey, good morning, Mike. This is the first time, I guess, I've worked with you.
Right.
What we're going to talk about today is abductions. It's not something that people want to think about, but I thought that it'd be good for us to partner with our Story County Sheriff's Office. We've got Captain Nick Lenny that's joining us from Story County Sheriff's Office, and I've asked him to talk about, first off, some ways that parents can help protect their children from abductions, and then we're going to highlight a program, an outstanding program the Story County Sheriff's Office has put together. It's called a Partners. And it brings together all the resources that are available across both this county and across this state, so that if we should have an unfortunate event like this occur, that we can react very, very quickly to it and try and maximize our chances of having a good outcome from an event like this. So I'm going to turn it over to Captain Lenny and have him give our listeners some tips on how to prevent or be prepared for prepare their children and their families to prevent abductions. Captain Lenny, it's over to you.
Thanks, Pete. Appreciate being on this morning. I first want to start off by just stating that child abduction has always been a very high priority, if not one of the top priorities of our sheriff's office. Ever since I started here, Sheriff Fitzgerald has always instilled that in us. We hope that we never go through an actual child abduction call. We respond to many missing children reports, which thankfully most of those get resolved in a short period of time. But should we have a child abduction, we don't want to be caught flat-footed and unprepared, because we know time is of the essence. And we'll talk a little bit about that here later in the program. But we want to make sure we are prepared, ready to respond, and know what we need to do from the get-go. A little information on abductions. First off, one of the primary things we need to determine when we get a report of a missing child is it actually an abduction? Is it some sort of other missing child, such as an endangered runaway, or just some other case going on there where the child is missing? So we will we'll respond on scene, and we found through research and our experience, frankly, that about 90%, 91% of missing children that get reported are actually endangered runaways. So we have a lot of those mixed in, and it's important that we comb through what the actual details behind the missing child are as quickly as possible. We don't want to be sitting on a call believing it's a runaway child when it actually was an abduction, and we're losing valuable time. So typically we'll see a couple main types of abductions. You'll see custodial or parental abductions. Typically those involve the parents. There's a myth out there that those typically are not harmful to the kids, since it's family or a parent taking the child, that they're relatively safe. But those types of abductions actually account for 60% of the Amber Alerts that get put out. And to reach the level of an Amber Alert, you have to meet certain criteria. And one of those are you have to show that that child is in immediate danger of serious injury or death. And so a lot of those cases, you know, can be very dangerous.
And Captain Lenny, yep. If you could just, for our listeners, review what an Amber Alert is.
Well, an Amber Alert is a nationwide alert put out through broadcast, and it identifies the details of the missing child. It typically will identify the child. You also have to identify the abductor. You have to have information on the abductor, details such as, you know, who it is, what vehicles they're driving, maybe clothing description. One of the other criteria to meet an Amber Alert to get that put out is you have to know that the child's in imminent danger, believe that the child's in imminent danger of serious bodily harm or death. And the child needs to be under 18. Those essentially are the criteria. If you meet that, we would fill out the application form, send it to the state. The state quickly reviews that. If it meets the criteria, they put it out. They're very cautious about not overdoing the Amber Alert. They want to make sure that when they do put it out, it catches everybody's attention and they listen to it. If we got an Amber Alert once or twice a week, after a while, it's just going to be something everybody's used to, and you know it's not going to be as effective. So you don't see them very often, but when you see an Amber Alert come out, you hear it on your radio, or you see it on the news or on the TV, it is a very serious situation, and we are imploring everybody in the community to help us keep eyes out for the suspect vehicle, for the suspect perpetrator, for the kid, because time is of the essence.
I know that on some of the interstate signs, especially when an Amber Alert is in play, that it comes across on those information boards. I think that's great because of the interstate traffic that goes on there.
Yeah, that's a great place to get that information out. And we found when an abduction takes place, if the perpetrator has a intent to seriously injure or kill that child, it typically happens within 3 hours of the abduction. So when I talk about time is of the essence, that's really the time frame. And really, for law enforcement and all the others that respond, It's much less than that, because by the time we get the report, that clock is already ticking. We may not get the report that the child's been abducted until an hour and a half, you know, into it. And so we're already behind the curveball. And so when we respond, we want to make sure we know what we're doing and we're hitting all the right steps at the right times and getting the process started quickly.
Captain Lenny, I think before I interrupted you, you were just starting to get into some of the proactive measures or preparedness yep. for abductions?
Absolutely. Some of the methods a person can take or parents can take to help prevent abductions, obviously, starts with stranger danger at a very young age with your kids. But really, a kid is never too old to hear the stranger danger talk. As they get older, they get a little more complacent. Sometimes they get a little more trusting. And so it doesn't hurt for them to hear the stranger danger talk. One thing to get out to the kids is anytime that you're in a situation where you feel a stranger is trying to grab you, take you, abduct you, kidnap you, whatever you want to call it, don't be compliant. The best thing you can do is resist, kick, punch, bite, claw, whatever you got to do, run, obviously, scream as loud as you can. The goal is to get other people's attention, get people's attention focused on you. There's a lot higher survival rate if you get other adults' attention by screaming as opposed to just being compliant and going along with it. Talk to your kids about not being lured in. We've all talked about, you know, a car pulling up on the side of the road and asking a kid if they want candy, or helping to find their pets. That's another popular one. Hey, I lost my dog. You know, I'll give you $5 if you can come help me find my dog. Asking the kid to come up and give them directions. Doing small jobs, handy jobs where they'll pay them money. Or sometimes they'll even use a ploy and tell the children, your mom sent me here to pick you up. I'm supposed to give you a ride home. And they'll actually do the research if it's a targeted abduction. With all the social media and everything else out there, if they can find your child's name or your mother's name and use that and say, hey, your mom Karen told me to come pick you up this morning, you know, Joshua, and I'm supposed to take you home. And just to try to build a rapport with that child and get that child lured in. These are things you don't want your child to be worried about every single day and paranoid about, but they need to hear it because there are incidents out there where this happens. You want to set boundaries on where your kids can go. Make sure you know where they hang out after school. If they go leave house early before school, where they're going, where they like to hang out on the weekends. The friend's house, it's always good to know what friends they hang with, the phone numbers and the addresses of the friends, where they may be at. Know their routes on the way to school and home from school or any place they're going. Make sure they don't take shortcuts and follow up with their online activities. Make sure they're not getting lured in through some online social site. So keep tabs on what they're doing online, who they're talking to, and make sure their online habits are safe. Probably one of the biggest things you can also do with your kids is anytime they're walking, playing, or going somewhere, make sure they're going in pairs with other children, adults. Groups are better, but at a minimum, make sure they're in pairs. You can go around your neighborhood and also show your children safe homes within the neighborhood that you know to be safe. So if they have to run for safety, point out places that are safe places for them to run to and go to if they need to. And make sure your children, the younger ones especially, know their names, their parents' names, the address, the phone numbers, how to dial 911, so that they can easily be identified if they're found by a responsible adult.
So I noticed that in the script that you sent me that some of the other proactive things are to start early and get fingerprints and some other things. Can you cover that list?
Yes, absolutely. Fingerprints and ID cards are a biggie. Make sure you get that done as early as possible. Other things you can do is just pay attention to their outfits on a daily basis. If your child goes missing, and you call us, one of the first questions we're going to want to know is, now, what is your child wearing? What are they dressed in? What kind of shoes are they wearing? What kind of coat? And so pay attention to what your child wearing that day so that you can provide an accurate description if you need to. Keeping current pictures of your children. No more than every 6 months, but if they're changing hairstyles or they're going through a growth stage where they can change appearance dramatically within 6 months to a year, keep current pictures, because that's another thing we will ask for when we show up on scene. Aside from information that might be on the ID cards, but knowing what they look like, we'll take that picture and we'll scan it in, send it to our dispatch center. That gets entered into the national database, and it also gets sent out to all the responding law enforcement personnel that are looking for this child so they can quickly identify them.
So
I was just going to say,
most of our youngsters these days do have their cell phones, and you made the point that they should know how to dial 911. Is that, that's right, correct?
That's correct. Make sure they know how to dial 911, how to utilize that emergency function on their phone, also how to just dial for non-emergency purposes, parents or other adults.
Okay.
The other thing with the electronics is they have great tracking capabilities, so utilize that capability with the GPS built in. And the ability for the parents or law enforcement to find out where that phone is at any given time.
So what should an individual do if you suspect that your child is missing?
Well, the first thing you should do is call 911 immediately. That's something you don't want to hesitate on. Get us called. We would much rather be called and en route and then find out that you just found your child hiding in the back room than not calling and being even further behind the curveball. So call 911 immediately. When you call 911, be ready to answer questions about when you last saw your child, when you last talked to them, where they're at, things of this nature. The second thing I would say to do is search, and search everywhere. It's amazing where you'd find your kids. It's kind of surprising to me how many times we got called to a missing child that seemed legitimate. We show up at the house, and one of the first things we do after we get some of the basic information from the parent is get a consent from them to search their house, search their cars, search all their outbuildings. And upon doing that, many times I have personally found the kids within the house. They're either under a big pile of blankets or clothes sleeping. They're out in another outbuilding that nobody thought they'd be in. Oftentimes they're right there. They just weren't present when the parent was looking for them. And so we recommend search everywhere. Even though the parents have searched, when we show up, we'll get that consent to search, and we'll also search the place for you. Be ready to ask the who, what, when, where's to dispatch and law enforcement when we show up on scene. Like I said, age description, clothing description, custody status. We're going to want to know that. We're going to want to know if there's any other adults, persons of interest that they have. Distinguishing characteristics about the child, whether or not the child has a cell phone. We potentially can do what's called a cell phone ping if we know what the cell phone company is, and we can ping the cell phone for activity. And it's not highly accurate, but it's accurate enough to give us a general idea of where that phone is at any given time. While you're waiting for law enforcement, you can call family, friends, and neighbors to see if they've seen your child. And make sure they're aware that you're looking for your child so they can be on the lookout for them as well.
Okay, Captain Lenny, you were talking about some of the things that officers will do once they are contacted. You've got, there's Activate Partners. What is the Partners program?
Well, the Partners group is a group that the Sheriff's Office helped put together, and it is a group of community stakeholders, I guess you would call it, of many different entities, one of them being the Story County EMA Association, our Story County Attorney's Office. Essentially, all of our partner law enforcement agencies within the county are part of this group. Star One, Search and Rescue, RSVP, Story County RSVP Volunteer Group are part of this group. The Iowa DCI is a member of this group. And so anytime we have a missing child that we believe to be an abduction or an endangered runaway, we will activate the partners group, meaning we'll send out a page to the full group, letting them know what's going on, and putting them on standby for assistance. For example, our RSVP volunteers will come in and help man a phone bank that we set up here at the sheriff's office. We'll expect a high volume of incoming calls once we put out the tip line. And just what we have on staff for our 911 dispatchers, they would be overwhelmed immediately with it. So RSVP has been kind enough to offer up those volunteers. They put in a lot of training, and they'll come into our sheriff's office. We'll have the phone bank with several phone lines set up, and they'll take those initial calls for us.
And this Star is, we'll go ahead and finish Star One.
Star One is a search component for us, and they have capabilities where they can call in K-9 resources, UAS drone resources, and personnel as well. So they'll help with search capabilities on the scene. EMA is going to help us with logistics and stuff like that.
Sure, and that's just what I was going to ask, is that must be where Keith's department comes in as far as helping with logistics and that kind of situation. Captain Lenny, is there anything else that we've missed here before we turn it over to Keith for the last words?
No, I think I'll turn it over to Keith. I think that's a good segue into his segment.
Okay, thank you. That was very inclusive of everything that we need to know. Keith, what have you got to add?
The only thing I've got to add is that this is just another example of where our community needs to come together to respond to these kinds of emergencies. The neighborhood, watching out for our children while they're out and about. If they see something that doesn't look right out there, somebody that's too close to kids that they don't know, if they know these kids, it's time to step in and just protect our children, be watching out for them, and then we can come together also. If we have an unfortunate situation like this, draw upon the resources of our community, many of them volunteer. So I ask that people think about ways that they can help volunteer in their organizations like RSVP, like Star One, so that we have these resources that we hope we never need to use, but we've got them in our hip pocket if we need them.
You know, it's a different world from what we grew up in, that's for sure, because it seemed like in your neighborhoods, everybody pretty much knew one another, and those adults out there, they were your surrogate parents in many situations, and it's too bad we can't develop that a little bit more. And I think in some areas it is, but boy, we can sure improve that, because growing up, I know, you know, we were kicked out when the sun rose, and we weren't expected home for supper until sunset or thereabouts, and you had other people looking out for you. It was a community. And I think this program and what Captain Lenny has been reviewing, that's part of our new community. So we all need to step up. That's for sure.
Definitely. It's for these kind of events, for all kinds of events that are disaster related, we have to be a community. We have to look out for each other.
Well, thank you, Captain Nick Lenny, and thank you, Keith Morgan, and we will welcome you back soon, I hope. And with that, we'll say adios, and we will greet Susan Guiasta, the coordinator of Ames, the Ames City coordinator. Oh, I'm glad. See, I had to do something to make her smile today so she could beam.
Yeah, thank you. Susan, good to see you.
Yeah, Susan, what have we got for the city of Ames this week? I know there's some meetings coming up.
There is. Before I get into the meetings, and I have Chris Evans with me, who is an environmental engineer with Water and Pollution Control Department. She's going to talk about a very important meeting that we have coming up. But first, I just wanted to clarify some confusion that we're getting regarding the City of Ames mask or face covering mandate. And that is that the City of Ames is under a face covering ordinance that continues through the end of June. And that was something that went into place late summer, and the City Council extended it again in December. So regardless of the state mandate, the city has and can go beyond that mandate into something more strict. So our face covering mandate has never changed. It continues that if you are in a public place, which is even a private business that opens itself to the public, a grocery store, a department store, the mall, you need to be wearing a face covering because that is the city mandate. And so, you know, we had a lot of discussion about this in the summer. It was extended again pretty quietly in December, but there was no reason not to extend it. We still believe that the pandemic is a danger. We still believe that masks can help prevent the spread of coronavirus. So please mask up. It is the law in Ames. Yay. It's good to see those masks out there.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, yeah. So definitely. I just wanted to.
We can't hear that message enough, Susan. I totally agree.
I know there's been a lot of questions that what the governor did, and that was a statewide. Cities can, they must hit the minimum of the state law, but they can go deeper or farther. So in Ames, and Story County has a mask mandate as well. So we'll still be wearing those face coverings for a while, at least in Ames until the end of June.
It's glad to know that we listen to our public health experts.
Well, that is where the advice came from. So we started with them. So, however, today I wanted to talk about, I wanted to bring Chris Evans, who is an expert with our Ames Water and Pollution Control Department, and she is in charge of a pretty exciting project I wanted her to share.
Okay. Welcome, Chris. What have you got to share with us?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. We are inviting the public to come listen to some plans we have. We built a state-of-the-art facility, new drinking water treatment plant, that went into operation about 3 or 4 years, 2017. And it's been a terrific facility. And we now have made a commitment to the community to go back to the old water treatment plant. And we are going to take that down. We promised the community we wouldn't let it become an abandoned eyesore. So on Thursday night, we invite the public to come meet with the Water and Pollution Control Department and our consulting team to talk about what this demolition is going to look like, how it could affect the neighbors. One thing I want to make sure that people understand, though, is it's just the water treatment plant. There's a two-story brick building on the water plant site that's going to stay. We're just taking down the treatment plant part of the site.
Are you going to plug the pipe before you take it down so we don't lose our water?
Hope so. Boy, that would make quite the mess. Yeah, actually, that plant was decommissioned as soon as we started up, so there hasn't been any water flowing through it in the last 3 years.
Sure. In disassembling this huge erector kit, you know, you often see on construction sites, there are some cameras that people can tune into. Is there going to be something like that that our citizens can watch as this is decommissioned and taken down?
Definitely. So one of the concerns is we need to keep the public away to keep them safe. We want to make sure parents know where their kids are so they're not wandering into the site. But knowing that this is a pretty important icon building for the community, we are going to provide a webcam so that people can check the progress. We did that on the construction of the new water plant and got lots of positive feedback, people checking up on it. And so we want to offer that to the community as well for them to watch the changes that are going to occur with that building.
Now, it's popular. And it's been so since the 70s, when I was getting into this, to recycle and reuse. Will any of the material of this plant be reusable or recyclable, or what are the plans for those materials?
That's a great question. So the Water and Pollution Control Department and the City of Ames is committed to sustainability, and we will be demolishing the plant with that in mind. One of the things that we hope to do is save the brick from some of the structures you see and use that in a future expansion. We're hoping to reuse the site to meet some current space needs. We'd like to reuse the brick. They want to try and maybe recycle some of the concrete. We're hoping to do as much recycling, reusing as possible with this type of project.
That sounds great. That's a good way to, like you say, reuse, be sustainable, and in some ways reduce our carbon footprint for sure.
Exactly.
Are there any other? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in about the Water and Pollution Control Department. Really does try to be a good neighbor. They are right next to the Ames Power Plant that also tries to be a good neighbor. They are sort of tucked away in downtown, but right next to a residential neighborhood. So they did send postcards out. I'm sorry, actually letters out to the neighbors in that area because, you know, you could live around there and not really know what's happening. And then suddenly see all the construction going on. And so Chris is meeting on Thursday. It will be virtual, 6 p.m., and you can hook in by Zoom. But also, her name and phone number and email address are on those letters. She's happy to take questions. Being a good neighbor is part of what we do as your local government. We want to make sure that people's questions are answered.
That's great.
Absolutely.
Call
the water plant with any questions. I'm happy to talk to people with any concerns or ideas. We don't have this finalized yet, so if people have suggestions, we're happy to hear them.
It's good to know that you're thinking about the neighborhoods. In my former college student days, I lived a couple blocks north of that area, partly because, you know, I study better when it's quiet, and so I was next to the cemetery. it's great that you're keeping that communication link up with the folks that live around there.
Thank you. Yeah, they've been great neighbors. That water plant was in operation in one form or another for over a century. And so those neighbors were important to us. They still are. They're part of our community. And so we want to make sure that we understand some of their concerns. And we just want them to be aware of what they may expect, how it may impact them. But then we're trying to minimize the duration. So hopefully it won't be an inconvenience terribly long.
Great. Anything else, Chris, before I ask Susan her final question?
Just a reminder that the public meeting is Thursday, 6 p.m., virtual meeting. We'll have it on social media to get the link, but we'll also make it available after that night.
Great. Thank you, Chris. And Susan, the question I was going to ask is, I know the budget meetings were being held. Is that about ready to wrap up?
Well, funny you should say that. We do have a city council meeting tonight at 6 p.m. And you can learn more about the budget because the process actually continues through March where we have to have our budget certified and sent to the state. And so for the next couple of Tuesdays, there'll be some component or another of budget on there for those who want to view the budget documents, cityofames.org/finance. And for those, again, who want to attend Thursday's virtual meeting, it's on the front page of our website, cityofames.org. Just look for the calendar event.
Thank you, Susan. And stay warm and stay safe, Chris and Susan. Thanks again.
You
too. Daylight come and me want go home. Work all night and I drink a rum.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Stack banana till the morning come.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Come Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Daylight come and me want.
And with that heartwarming rendition from Harry Belafonte, we are welcoming our top banana for KHOI Community Radio, Miss Anna. How are you today?
Well, I'm happy with all the music that's been part of the Local Talk program today. It's been fantastic. And I just wanted to thank all the guests for being great neighbors and being part of our community radio station. And I wanted to also, in the spirit of what Susan shared with us, to thank our local healthcare heroes for their dedicated work in our communities against COVID-19. and we can support their efforts by wearing a mask whenever we leave our home. So mask up, everybody. And also, I wanted to say SMAP. Poor SMAP. SMAP is fantastic. Right to your, did I get his name right?
Yes. SMAP. SMAP.
I assigned it a gender.
It's SMAP.
SMAP. SMAP. Save SMAP. All right. So moving to Tune In Tuesday, as I try and tempt you to listen to KHOI this Tuesday today. And I have two heart-to-heart poems that I find that connects what you will hear on KHO today at noon and at 7 p.m., which I will explain after I share these little poems. So the first one is Fluffy Hair on Nanny Goats. Fluffy hair on nanny goats, crazy, curly, milk-lined throats. Give them a lively happiness, their exuberance, such sassiness. Fluffy hair on nanny goats, crazy, curly, milk-lined throats. They show their spark in barnyards now. They prance and cavort, truly know how. Fluffy hair on nanny goats, crazy, curly, milk-lined throats. Amid imaginative fantasy, these happy animals will be. Fluffy hair on nanny goats, crazy, curly, milk-lined throats. They make me chuckle, laugh, tee-hee. Rough goats, so happy and carefree. All right, let's move to goats to one more heart-to-heart poem about chocolate craving.
Anna, do you read to little kids?
I should. I read to myself. But listen to this poem, which is all about chocolate. I dream in chocolate, mostly Linder. And heaven may my test buds be heightened. Extra senses, caramel cream so divine. White chocolate and dark. I confess my inner delights and am rewarded. Walls of peppermint, green and red, mint and fresh. Endless food galore. Every man, woman, and child will feast. No hunger, no worries. Everyone's satisfied, gratified. Our sights set on new flavors. Our spirits waiting. Ask and ye shall receive. And abundance forevermore. New flavors for God's favorite creations. The good rewarded while the wicked condemned forevermore. And that was a poem titled Cravings by India Morrow. So why poems about goats and chocolate cravings, you might ask? Well, because on the Donna Lana Kitchen Show, this dynamic duo will share some tasty ideas for Valentine's Day treats, which you know involves chocolate. Cocoa nibs they'll be talking about, and they'll be talking about milking goats. What a interesting combination of chocolate and milking goats. And then they'll talk about cupcakes with the surprising frosting. I really want to know what the surprising frosting is. Is it avocado? Is it, what is it? So you'll have to tune in to find out.
Made out of goat milk.
Yes. Well, and you'll like this, Mike Metz, because they'll have science in the kitchen with the question, how does baking powder work, and why do we crave sweets? So again, what is this Donna Lana Kitchen Show, you might ask? Well, they talk about food, farming, recipes, advice, and opinions. Chef Donna and Farmer Lana explore the local food scene with a lively discussion and good humor at noon on Tuesday, repeated at 7 p.m. So if you tune in, you'll find out those answers to how does baking powder work, and why do we crave sweets? Now, speaking of sweets, Mike Metz, when I came into the studio this past weekend, what was waiting for me? Well, I'll tell you. Honey, lots of it. And let's talk about some heart-to-heart facts about honey, shall we?
Oh, no. Now,
yep. I'm going to give you the facts because I'm going to put on my science hat.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Just the facts. Do you know the science? Do you know the science? I'm wishing that it was sunny and hot. Do you know the science behind honey? Well, let me explain it to you with the help of Dr. Jennifer Levy, who led the Urban Honeybee Project in 2013. And I'm going to read it like I'm a scientist. Within the honeybee's hive, there are three different areas: honey stores, pollen stores, and brood. The brood area in the hive is basically in 3D space, the size of a football. And then above the football will be where all the honey is stored, and then kind of to the sides, and underneath is where the pollen tends to be stored. So that's my best sign.
Anna, you're just missing the pocket protector.
Yes. Well, the listeners don't know that. So I do have a pocket protector with the pens in there. So this heart-to-heart science tidbit about honey connects us to Sunday's Super Bowl. As I'm sure you know that there were many snacks out there that were made from honey. And this is a great way for me to put on my science voice and ask, what will the listeners hear on Science Bites today, Mike Metz?
Well, I'll do my famous Anna Banana voice, and I will say that tonight, or this afternoon, 4:30 to 5, Sam Wormley and I are going to be playing excerpts from the Ames Climate Report that we had the opportunity, Ollie, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, that's part of the coursework at Iowa State University. We had a presentation, a two-part presentation, and our own Mary Richards is involved in part of that. And so we're going to be playing a couple of excerpts of that program, probably for the next 2 weeks.
And they can tune in to Science Bites this Tuesday at what time?
4:30 to 5.
4:30 to 5. Well, if you tune in after that at 8:30 p.m., you get to spend time with me for the Heart to Heart Messages show. And I'll put on Mike Metz's version of the Anna Banana voice. I select songs to match the guest messages to our Heart to Heart conversation. So the second Tuesday of the month is reserved for Keisha Beasley and Angie Weekly to join me in a Heart to Heart conversation about what is in our hearts. We reveal our personalities, our choices, feelings, decisions, and our personal faith journeys. And we'll have a heart-to-heart conversation about all things connected to the month of February. So a sneak preview of one of the songs I selected to match to our heart-to-heart conversation is one dedication in the lyrics, which is this. To those who already know that February was named for a long month festival of purification and atonement, I dedicate these lyrics to you. Light drives in and brings us close. Salvation starts when we're in silence. White noise when we needed most, gaming ground and deep defiance. So, Mike Metz, but actually I should ask Mike Murphy, can you guess a song?
Mike Murphy told me he's going to go with Love is a Many Splendor Thing.
Yes, I thought so, but you're wrong again. But actually, you can find out if you are right by tuning in to KHOI 89.1 FM tonight at 8:30. Now, let's jump forward to Thursday. Mike Murphy, what's going on with you? Name it.
This week we're naming it 2001. Nothing at all like the movie.
Nothing at all, certainly. So that is certainly a year that we will not forget. And how can listeners share what they experienced either on September 11th of that year or any other date in 2001?
Well, it'll be a live program so that you can call and we'll put you on the air. Then that studio number is 515-232-0365, and we would love to hear people's stories from 2001.
Yeah, it was a very impactful, and I certainly remember what I was doing on September 11th of that year. I'm sure all of you do as well. So a lot of reasons to tune into KHOI. Now it is time for Anna Banana to split. So until next time, I hope that your days are connected to a community of love, care, and support that is KHOI, the heart of Iowa, which is you and me. So back to you, Mike Metz.
And to Pat.
You have been listening
to...
Yes, thank you. You have been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. Remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is a community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media. Live streaming of our broadcast can be found online at khoifm.org.
This program is produced by Lynn Carey and Ursula Rudenberg and engineered by Mike Murphy. Thank you, Mike. You heard from Dr. Brian Hornbuckle, Keith Morgan, Captain Nick Lenny, Susan Guiasta, and Chris Evans. I have been your host, Mike Metz.
Please consider becoming a member of this fine community radio station with your financial support. Go to our website at khoifm.org and press the yellow donate button to begin the process of becoming a member.
And Anna.
Yes, our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Sam, remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And
see you again on the radio.